Hello, Katie. I'm very relaxed.
Oh, you sound like you're dying. I was about to ask you what was wrong.
Oh, no, I'm just on holiday.
Oh, that's your holiday voice?
That's my holiday voice.
Remind me never to go on holiday with you.
Yeah, and why am I podcasting?
That's a good question. That is dedication. Tell us where you are.
I'm in Gran Canaria with all the other British tourists, and German and Swedish and Norwegian, I think. And actually, we keep hearing loads of Dutch people as well. We were climbing a mountain yesterday that literally was exclusively full of Dutch people. And one of my friends here is a bit of a Dutch celebrity, so everyone was recognizing him. And he was like, oh God, can't get away from it.
Well, I'm sorry for interrupting things and making you podcast, but it's nice to record this somewhere more glamorous for a change. Are you like sitting under a palm tree right now?
I'm literally crouched on my knees on the side of my bed because it's the best place acoustically. I'm already lost the feeling in my legs.
Oh.
The things I do for podcasting.
Yay.
Are you having a break?
No, I'm in a very unglamorous situation, just sitting here in my bedroom in Paris, as usual, surrounded by unfolded laundry that I've just taken out of the machine. So yeah, pretty glam. Not much to report on my end. Watched a football match this week, which is very exciting. I've decided very tentatively and very late in the game to get into the Women's World Cup. And our mutual friend Ingeborg was in town from the Netherlands, so we decided to go and support the national team in a bar. And it was cool. I was very happy to support it on like feminist grounds. But it is still football, isn't it? I realised that. So it's still quite boring.
Yeah. Football is football. It's all about trying to get a ball in the back of the net. Katie, we really shouldn't alienate a huge section of our audience who are, I'm sure, football supporters like most of the world.
So many people just switched off. We should probably move on. What's coming up this week? What are you chatting about?
We're going to be talking to someone who's been involved in a pretty huge protest movement in the Czech Republic. Benjamin Roll is one of the founders of the Million Moments for Democracy group. It's a student-led civil society group who instigated some pretty enormous protests in the Czech Republic last month against the populist billionaire Czech Prime Minister Andrej Babiš, who they want to resign due to allegations of fraud involving European Union funds and the appointment of a justice minister who they think might have been appointed to try and make those allegations go away. They've been the largest protests since the Velvet Revolution in 1989 and are estimated to have been attended by 2% of the population. So we'll be giving Benjamin a call later in the show. But first...
Good week, bad week. It's getting a bit of a makeover this week. What are we calling it again?
Meh week, brave week. It's not really got the same ring to it, has it?
It's got a great ring to it. It's probably our fault for inventing such a restrictive format. But yeah, the two big stories that we wanted to talk about this week don't really fit the mold of good week, bad week. So we've had to tweak it a little bit. Which one should we do first?
Should we do meh week?
Meh week goes to the whole of the European Union, really. And that is because, as you've probably heard, the leaders of Europe have finally managed to agree on who they think should be in charge over the next 5 years. They've managed to find nominees for the 5 top jobs in Europe, replacing the likes of Jean-Claude Juncker and Donald Tusk. And in the end, the arrangement that they came up with really made me think of what Pelle Gertsen said on our special episode about Brussels a couple of months back, which is that European politics is about coming up with a situation that no one is completely happy with, but no one is completely unhappy with either. Because that's exactly what seems to have happened. The nominees are just kind of meh. So the biggest job that was going was that of the European Commission chief, Jean-Claude Juncker, and all the obvious candidates got vetoed by one country or another due to their various grudges. We've ended up with someone who wasn't in the running in the first place, which is kind of weird. Her name is Ursula von der Leyen, and she's going to be the face of Europe, representing us on the world stage. And she's the first woman ever to get that job, which is something that was like really long overdue in and of itself. Just to tell you a little bit about who she is currently Germany's defense minister. She is center-right. She's seen as pretty brainy.
I was enjoying when it was announced on Twitter, there was this like Twitter battle between people saying, oh, she's one of the most liked ministers in Germany, and other people being like, no, she's literally the most unpopular minister in Germany. There seemed to be a lot of indecision about whether this was a clever or a really awful decision.
Yeah, I think one part of that is that there's a quite big divide between how she's seen in her country and maybe in Europe. So she's not very popular among the German public. She was indeed, I think, ranked as like the second least popular minister, partly because the defense ministry is kind of a mess right now. And to be fair to her, like, it's been a mess for ages, so she can't really be blamed for all of that. And in her previous job, she got loads of credit for campaigning for gender equality in the boardroom when she was Labour minister, and for getting better parental leave when she was family minister. Those things are good. And she has managed to get all of this stuff done while raising 7 children. And she speaks perfect French and perfect English. So she is a very impressive woman.
7?
Yeah, not bad, eh? Oof. Imagine giving birth to even one human. 7 is mad.
That is completely crazy.
So yeah, kind of like mixed opinions. She's seen as like obviously a very committed Europhile, and she's very much liked by Macron, Merkel. It's kind of more complicated relationship. She was like previously seen as Merkel's kind of heir apparent, but that whole thing has kind of gone away. But she's definitely very smart and competent, which is also true of another impressive woman who is coming back to Europe, Christine Lagarde. She's going to take over the European Central Bank. She used to run the IMF, and yeah, again, generally seen as a very capable human being. So some people have been billing those nominations as a victory for feminism. And it is good to see smart women winning big jobs, even for those of us who don't necessarily agree completely with their politics. But there's various reasons for the fact that it's meh week rather than good week. First, if you look across the top jobs as a whole, they all got given to people from like old Europe. So Donald Tusk's job is going to the Belgian Prime Minister, Charles Michel, and the Spanish Foreign Minister is going to take over as head of foreign policy, and there's an Italian who's going to lead the parliament. So it's been quite disappointing for people from Eastern Europe who've been arguing, you know, you need to give us more representation. Europe is not just Western Europe anymore. And in general, the other thing is they're just very establishment choices. There's no one there who's particularly like sort of risk-taking or exciting. You know, not that that should be prioritized over like the ability to run things properly, but someone like the Danish politician Margrethe Vestager, who was in the lineup before, she might have shaken things up a bit more.
Yeah, but I guess when you look at the UK at the moment, I think I'd be so happy with a meh week leader in the UK. So I started to think maybe meh is the best we can hope for.
Everything is relative now to us Brits. That's true. Competence is actually really nice as a quality. Anyway, the other thing that's a bit annoying is the way that they ended up appointing all of these people behind closed doors and not really paying that much attention in the end to the results of the European elections like they said they would. That wasn't ideal either. But, you know, I'm willing to give this new leadership the benefit of the doubt. If, this is the other thing, they have to make it through the confirmation process in a couple of weeks' time. So the Parliament, our lovely elected MEPs, get a chance to actually say, no, we're not having you. In which case, we'll be back to square one, which would be fun. But we'll see what happens.
Yeah, and the German Social Democrats have already said that they're not going to support her nomination, which probably won't make a difference in itself. But yeah, it could be a... Well, I don't know. Could it be a difficult ride?
If we were proper journalists, we'd say it was going to be a difficult ride. So let's say that. Wait and see. Who has had a... What's the other one? Brave week.
Well, yeah, I mean, we could call it Good Week. I'd give Good Week to Carola Rackett, the captain who rescued 42 migrants off the coast of Libya from the Mediterranean and then defied the Italian Coast Guard authorities by sailing into port and bringing the migrants, some of whom were very ill and needed urgent medical attention, to safety. Carola had a good week after an Italian judge ruled that she had not broken the law in trying to save human lives, despite the fact that a police boat was damaged while she was forcing her way into port. Carola had argued that it was accidental and apologised for the damage, and the judge agreed with her and released her from house arrest. This was a big victory for her, but she will probably face a long legal battle ahead with expected charges relating to the aiding of illegal immigration. So, yeah, maybe Good Week isn't appropriate, as you said, with that in mind, and maybe we should stick with Brave Week. Welcome to our new segment, Brave Week, Meh Week. Carola had been captaining a ship called Sea-Watch 3. It's the only humanitarian ship currently cruising off the coast of Libya, and she had rescued 42 migrants from an inflatable raft that was trying to make the crossing from Libya and wasn't up to the job. They ended up being stranded at sea for 2 weeks following the Italian authorities' refusal to admit the vessel into their waters, and a new decree that she had not known about before the rescue had been passed. and it meant that she couldn't enter the waters. Carola felt she had no choice but to eventually barge into port during the night as the situation was becoming desperate on board her ship. It was a very risky move, and it's a risky time to do something like this in Italy, partly because the populist government have made their opposition to immigration central to their success. And Matteo Salvini, the deputy PM, saw this case as an opportunity to attack the whole movement using Carola as a symbol. He described her action as an act of war and posted a kind of ranty, pointy video on Facebook condemning her for being politically motivated. Which, can I just say, like, if something has an element of political motivation, that doesn't make it inherently terrible, does it?
No, and also doesn't everything that Salvini does have a political motivation, pretty much?
Yes.
It's just like, he doesn't like this woman's politics, therefore it's bad.
Yeah. So yeah, this story has become a bit of a symbol for the battle in Europe between the anti-immigrant populists and the more humanitarian-minded people on the other side, if I can say that. Italy's hardline approach to arriving migrants has been causing quite a lot of tension within the EU for a while now. Many other EU leaders are pretty critical of Italy's actions, although lots of people think that the EU are becoming complicit because they're not actually punishing Italy for the way that they're behaving. It doesn't look like things will be ironed out anytime soon. Salvini just did the textbook right-wing populist thing of placing the blame of most of the troubles of the complicated Italian economy on the immigrants, which has been a very potent, dangerous, and factually incorrect argument. So Carola finds herself in the middle of this quite huge culture war, and she did something very brave. And what will happen now, nobody knows. But for having jumped the first legal hurdle, we imagine Carola will be quietly celebrating this week.
Great.
Do you think anyone's bought the film rights to this story already? Because it's so cinematic.
Oh my God. After just doing this like really inspiring story, you have to turn into a complete cynic and think about the quick buck you're going to make out of it, Dominic. Shame on you.
The European productions bring you.
You are a terrible person.
Well, some people who spend their time thinking about more important things are the people who have started this incredible social movement in the Czech Republic. So we should talk to Benjamin.
Yeah, so there's been these like crazy huge protests recently in the Czech Republic, or Czechia, as we're supposed to officially be calling it.
But it hasn't taken on, has it?
Somebody has to lead the fight, Dominic. Maybe it should be us. In Czechia, yeah, the biggest protest since the fall of communism. And it hasn't been talked about that much internationally because Central Europe gets shamefully little attention in the international media. So we just wanted to talk about it a little bit this week. Just to fill you in on the background, the protests are calling for the Prime Minister, Andrej Babiš, to resign. Babiš is a populist billionaire, might sound a little bit familiar, and he does sometimes get labelled as the Czech Trump. He is massively rich. I think he's actually richer than Trump. He owns this massive company called Agrofert, which has fingers in all kinds of pies, food and chemicals and the media. He owns a couple of like quite big newspapers. And he's also compared to Trump because he is pretty populist in his stance on immigration in particular. He said some pretty vile things on that front. And in general, the way that he paints himself as being anti-establishment. And he's used kind of Eurosceptic rhetoric in the past and done this whole kind of us versus them kind of thing.
And he literally has red caps with some slogan on it, or he had them during the EU campaign.
Did he really? I didn't see those.
Yeah.
Did they say like make Czechia great again or something?
It wasn't as direct a steal as that. I can't remember what it said.
It'd be funny if Trump sued him for like copyright infringement. Billionaire on billionaire. Anyway, the reason that the protesters want him to resign is because he has been accused of corruption. He's been accused of hiding the fact that he was the owner of this conference centre so that it could qualify for EU subsidies for small businesses, which is interesting. And yeah, in a minute, we're going to be talking to one of the leaders of this grassroots movement that has sprung up against this prime minister. But first of all, we wanted to take you there to Prague so you could hear what it sounds like, because these protests are so big and so loud. The Czech radio producer Tereza Rekova was down at the protest in Prague recently, and she made some recordings, and this is what they sounded like.
Za spodem na vinarod plný
So things really came to a head in the Czech Republic, and people started getting really angry when, just as charges were being recommended by the police against the Prime Minister appointed a new Justice Secretary, someone who themselves has a bit of a shady past or has some allegations against them. And people thought that was a step too far.
Especially because she's got the potential ability to make this whole thing go away.
That magical power. So, the protest became pretty huge. And we're going to now speak to one of the leaders of this student-led civil society group, which is called Million Moments for Democracy. Benjamin Roll is a student himself, and we called him up to find out how it all happened.
Babiš himself came to power on an anti-corruption campaign, didn't he? That seems kind of ironic.
Well, this is a problem. People are disappointed, were very disappointed of politics before Babiš, and because there were lots of corruption and lots of politicians did bad mistakes. Suddenly, Babiš showed up and he said, "I will manage it. You don't have to care about anything. You will just vote for me and I will make it better." He was one of the biggest businessmen, so he was connected with all those politicians all those years before. So that's the problem, that he is saying that he is new and he is making some change, but he is part of establishment all those 30 years of our republic.
So I was wondering, how has the government responded to your protests? Has Babiš felt the pressure, do you think?
He feels the pressure because it's more than just protest now. In those last months, he is still prosecuted. So there are lots of problems around him, around his government. Even though he won the European election, he didn't win so high as he believed before. So he's getting nervous and he's making mistakes. But he publicly reacts like he doesn't care about the protest.
As you said, his party did come top in the country, in the European elections just now. How has his party managed to stay so popular, given that there are these massive protests against him on the streets?
For his voters, there is no alternative, or they don't see any alternative. They know that he's not ideal prime minister, but they believe that at least he do something for them, which is, I think, just a myth, but he is very good with his PR and so on. So nowadays, our republic is good. Lots of people are having good lives. There's no crisis. And they remember how it was during the crisis. And I think they are afraid that it's somehow connected with those parties who are against Babiš. And they are afraid that if they will come back, they once again will have bad times. So I think that's something we need to explain to society, that Andrej Babiš has no part of the situation nowadays, that it's more global thing.
Do you think there's any chance that your movement might evolve into a political party?
Well, I don't think so. We want to stay as a civil society movement because we think that one of the biggest problems of our democracy are passive citizens, that they don't care about politics, that they don't know how they can do something publicly. So we are trying to activate civil society in our republic. We have to somehow cooperate with politicians, or maybe we can create environment from which some new party can grow up or some new politician. I think that's the important thing now, and that's our role, I think. And if we became a party, I think we would be divided because there are really lots of different opinions on lots of things. So we are connected just on those principal things, caring about democracy. I'm one of the students who started this movement, but nowadays, there are not just students, there are even older people among the protesters. Lots of different people from left to right and from young to old.
I read a newspaper article. One of the Czech newspapers was describing your movement as a movement that was finally giving a voice to the frustrations of lots and lots of people in the country. Can you just describe for me, like, what are those frustrations really? Is this just about Babiš, or is this about, like, wider frustrations with the way that politics works?
So I think the frustration began in 2013, I think, when Miloš Zeman was elected president. And he is a kind of person who doesn't care about any values, dividing society, and he's a hateful person. There is more and more pressure on democratic institutions. The kind of people who are getting the power nowadays are people who doesn't care about any values, but they want more and more power for themselves. And Andrej Babiš is one of them. And he is like the most visible. And now I think he has the most power in Czech Republic because he owns the biggest companies. He owns the biggest media house. That we are getting more and more afraid that we will lose our free democratic system because of all these things.
Well, after all this talk of populists, we probably do need a happy ending this week. And this week's happy ending is the story of the most fantastic fox, a female Arctic fox, so fantastically speedy that researchers thought that maybe something had gone wrong with their tracking equipment, or perhaps someone had put it on a boat. But they discovered that no, it couldn't have been put on a boat because of the route that it was taking couldn't have been accessed by boats. So some Norwegian polar scientists at the Norwegian Polar Institute were tracking the migration of foxes, and one female fox they were tracking travelled all the way from Norway to Canada in just 76 days by foot. Do we say by foot if they've got paws?
By paws.
So that's over 3,500 kilometers at an average of 46 kilometers per day, and it is thought to be the fastest movement recorded for any animal of this species. Arctic foxes are very hardy, and they can survive temperatures down to minus 50 degrees Celsius. That's minus 58 Fahrenheit for people who are of that persuasion. And they look pretty cute with their furry paws and little short snouts, which both apparently help them with the cold. And of course, this story is also a reminder of how tragic it is that the ice in the north of our planet is melting so quickly, as it's going to make it impossible for some animals to migrate. Oh shit, this is meant to be a happy ending.
Yeah, where are we going with this?
I forgot.
Can we not just concentrate on the cute and hardy little fox that did this really long walk?
Yeah, wonderful, cute, fast fox. Happy ending.
We should take that overground route. We could walk all the way to North America.
You can do that on your own.
Right, I'm going to leave you to your deck chair and your cocktail. It's time that you stopped crouching.
Yeah, it is. I'll see if I can get the feeling back in my legs anytime soon. But before we go, shouldn't you remind people of the social media?
Maybe I should. You can find us on all kinds of places on the internet. We're on Twitter at EuropeansPod, Instagram at EuropeansPodcast, and on Facebook, if you just type in the Europeans Podcast, you'll find us. Oh, you can also throw some money in the tip jar if you like the show. We've got a little fund on patreon.com, which we're using to collect money. We bought a new microphone for Dominic a while back. So if you like the show, please feel free to give us a little donation over there. It's patreon.com/EuropeansPodcast.
But for now, that's it. We'll be back next Tuesday with more stories from around the continent. Adios, amigos.
Ciao.